In the early 1930s, there was an abandoned temple in Bangkok, Thailand, that housed a stucco-covered statue of the Buddha, which stood nearly 10 feet tall. Reconstruction in Chinatown meant that the temple would be destroyed. The statue, although not attractive, could not be destroyed. So it was relocated to a pagoda nearby. The new temple didn't have a building large enough to house the statue, so it was kept for 20 years under a simple tin roof. In 1955, a new building was built, and the monks decided to install the statue there. A crane was supposed to move the statue carefully, but a cable broke, and the statue fell in the mud. The workers saw this as a bad omen and ran away. They left the statue on the soil. It was rainy season, and as if confirming the bad omen, a terrible storm came. It lasted the whole night and flooded the entire city. At dawn the next day, the abbot of the temple came to evaluate the damage. He began removing the mud. He observed that the wet stucco was cracking. What he saw underneath the cracked stucco was beyond his imagination. When all of the stucco was removed, what was revealed was the largest solid gold statue of the Buddha in the world. True story. It is believed that the statue was created in the 13th century, and several hundred years later, monks covered the statue with plaster in order to hide it from the Burmese army that was besieging the city. After being moved to Bangkok, its true composition was forgotten for almost 200 years. What I appreciate about this story, even more than the fact that it's true, is that it has powerful symbolism. Underneath the exterior of us, too, lies a priceless treasure, worth more than all the money we'll ever have. Yet we identify with the clay covering, the covering that we have used to hide and protect the treasure within us. How many of you remember the song from the musical South Pacific? You know the one I mean. You've got to be taught to hate and fear. You've got to be taught from year to year. It's got to be drummed in your dear little ear. You've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be taught before it's too late, before you're 6 or 7 or 8, to hate all the people your relatives hate. You've got to be carefully taught. If you're like me, when you hear that song, part of your response is, right on. And maybe also, I'm so glad I'm a liberal and not one of those racist, narrow-minded people in that other church. Maybe you're thinking that we're the progressives who know better and stand on the right side of the issues such as marriage equality and immigration. We're the progressives, the liberals. Growing up, we learned that boys are more important. It's better to be a boy. It didn't have to be said explicitly. It was obvious in the way that things were and are. Boys learn to be careful not to throw like a girl, walk like a girl, talk like a girl, or carry their books like a girl. Being like a girl was not good. I won't assume to know what it was like growing up a girl, but I'm pretty sure that you resisted this idea that boys are better. We all did. In school, we learned that there are smart kids and not so smart kids. strong boys and weak boys, pretty girls and not so pretty girls. There were athletic, coordinated kids and not so coordinated kids. And of course, we knew which it was better to be, because there were pejorative names for every undesirable group. And it never was the words, it was the attitude and the energy that went along with those words that hurt. You've got to be taught to hate and fear. We learned that if we were good, we would get rewarded, and if we were bad, we'd get punished. And little by little, the territory of where it was okay to be us got smaller. If ever there was a time that we had a sense of belonging to one big human family and an interconnected web of existence of all life, we were carefully taught who was one of us and who was not. If once we looked into people's eyes and saw golden Buddha, that time passed. We learned instead that there are some amazing people, and then there's everybody else. Still, we never completely accept such conditioning. A part of us clings to the knowledge of the sacredness of our being, the beauty of our humanity. One of the reasons we come together as Unitarian Universalists is to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Most of you probably noticed that the sermon title for today and wondered what I meant by nonviolent communication or compassionate conversations. You may have read that I would draw on Marshall Rosenberg's work known as Nonviolent Communication, or NVC, and offer suggestions on how to have more enjoyable holiday family gatherings this year. So you may be waiting to hear some smart formula that I have that will enable you to break through those stuck places of family conflict so that everything will go well. Or if not everything, enough to make us the smart ones, the good ones. Maybe this sermon will turn us into people who never even think of getting ugly with our family and our friends. Not going to happen. I will say a little more about compassionate conversations, nonviolent communication, and I do have some ideas that I think can help us to have more peace and joy with our holiday gatherings this year. I said that I'd say a little more about nonviolent communication. If you're thinking that you hadn't heard me say anything about NBC explicitly, you're correct. I have suggested that as children, we had a curiosity and awe toward the energy of life, and that Unitarian Universalism encourages us to reclaim these. Curiosity, curious respect towards the life force, leads to a sense of the sacredness or inherent worth and dignity of every person. The consciousness of nonviolent communication can be described as an attitude, a desire, a willingness to connect to that energy that is expressed as another person's feelings and needs. The capacity to hold everybody's needs as equally precious is what enables us to see the inherent worth and dignity in ourselves and others. I imagine that each of us has had at various times connection to someone in ways that allowed us to remember the sacredness of humanity, if not everybody, at least with this person. How often, though, when we're talking to each other, do we have a palpable sense of the inherent worth and dignity of each person? Does anybody here have this all the time? I know I do not. Holding everyone's needs as equally important is a middle ground between two familiar poles. We often either ignore the needs of another person or other people in order to get something that we want, or we ignore our own needs. We dismiss what is deeply meaningful to us in an attempt to fulfill someone else's needs. Anybody besides me ever do these things? What happens? Ignoring other people's needs to get what we want generates a cost upon the relationship because the other person or people sense that they and their needs are unimportant to us. If pleasing another person comes at the expense of our connection to ourselves, to our feelings and needs, that too is costly. We may become resentful, or we may come to believe that our needs are less important than other people's. And then we might find ourselves losing our desire or willingness to get close to certain individuals or people in general. So now let's think about those upcoming family gatherings, whether it's with biological family or chosen family. If you have family relationships that are not fulfilling to you, it might be that you haven't yet found a way to remain connected to the precious values inside of you when you are with this person or all of your family members. You may have difficulty also connecting to the values that you share with them. Perhaps some of you are thinking, shared values with my family? You don't know my family members. We don't see eye to eye on anything. When we tell ourselves that others are fundamentally different from us, it decreases the chances that we will be able to connect in the way that I've been talking about. So I'm going to share some more of these nonviolent communication principles. Disclaimer, I'm not saying that they will be easy to apply. I'm not saying that you should be able to do them all the time or even at all. I am hoping that some of this will be useful to you. It has been for me. It's been helpful to realize that conflict happens on the level of strategy. When we can look beneath strategies and connect with the need that the person is trying to meet, that they're expressing, then a quality of connection becomes possible. By needs, I'm referring to aspects and qualities without which life does not thrive. For instance, we all need love, community, support, play, safety, acceptance. We all have the need to make choices for ourselves, to have a sense of power and usefulness. We all need appreciation, expression, peace, ease, rest, comfort, understanding. These are things that make us human. When we can hear these motivations in other people and in ourselves, we can connect with these shared human values and we will see and relate differently. Now, I might not like the strategy that somebody is using to try to get their needs met. I might see their strategy as what Marshall Rosenberg calls a tragic expression of unmet needs. Tragic because there ain't no way you're going to get it now, if you know what I'm talking about. What did we do then? Here's a wild suggestion for you, especially for the holiday season. Don't pay attention to what your family thinks. Radical. Pay attention instead to the beautiful things that they are seeking to fulfill. Unitarian Universalists often say, we don't have to think alike to love alike. How about we start using this not as a public relations slogan, but as a spiritual practice? Continue using it. Let's give credit. Let me give you an example. For a few years, I did not enjoy visits to my brother's house. I resented how he insisted on telling me things that I needed to change. The worst part was that it seemed to me that ne'er a day would go by with him that he wouldn't say, Philip, you know what your problem is? And then, in case I didn't know, he would tell me. I hated hearing it. I learned to bring compassion into this situation. First, I realized that I wanted acceptance and respect. I wanted to be seen with appreciation. Just admitting to myself what I wanted and connecting with those, I felt the shift already. Instead of being that focused out here on him. And then I looked even deeper and I realized that I felt frustrated because I wished we could be close as we had been many years ago. I got in touch with the tenderness underneath the frustration, the sweet but painful realization that I was grieving what we once had. I also grew in compassion for him and heard his words differently. I had to stretch a bit. Sometimes I still do. But I knew that in his way, he was expressing his caring for me. I guessed that my brother was feeling protective and that he wanted to know I would be okay. Then I thought about our brother Stephen, who was killed in a car accident many years ago, and how deep had been my brother David's sense of loss, how we had cried together. I also remembered how when I was a boy, David would play his guitar and sing for me. When I could hear and remember the kind of tenderness that really was still present, but had been invisible to me. Well, I bet you can guess that our relationship has changed. And what's more, I haven't heard him say that phrase in quite a while. Go figure. Instead of focusing on what we don't like about our family, we could ask ourselves, what kind of quality of relationship do we want? Ask yourself, what kind of quality of relationship do I want to have with my family? Actually, write it down. Write down the qualities that you want to experience this year. Write down how you would like to feel. And then set an intention. Now, don't demand perfection of yourself. That's a setup for a failure. The question is, what kind of experience do you want to give yourself this year? Yes, I said it that way intentionally. If you want it, why wait or hope that someone else is going to give it to you? Why wait for them to change? How do you want to relate to your relatives? We may remember things that we have said or done that we regret. The key is to stop punishing ourselves and them, and to grieve that we have fallen short. I've used an affirmation written by Louise Hay that goes, I forgive you for not being who I wanted you to be. I forgive you now and set you free. I actually use it on myself the most. Next suggestion, spend time writing out a list of strategies that you've used previously that have worked, that have helped you in your family situation, in your gatherings. What has helped you to avoid taking those things that they say or that happen personally? What has enabled you to be big-hearted or to speak your truth without being aggressive? To speak your truth in a way that you'll have peace about the next day and the next year. Last suggestion. Telling or non-verbally communicating to your relatives, suggesting that they're selfish, misguided, or just plain wrong, is not likely to go over well. Ask yourself instead, what are my values? What do I value? What do I want? What do I want to see here right now? And then ask yourself, are you acting on those values right now? I know that if we have compassion, speak and act in ways that are consistent with our values, serenity will be our companion. Thank you for this opportunity to share with you what I am learning. I wish you blessed holiday season. Peace be with you.
Don't not know beast patchen. Don't not know beast patchen. Don't not know beast patchen. Don't not know beast patchen.